Hello, friends. The hour is late, but I'm going to try to make another little program here. It will be program 40 for telepathy and the etheric vehicle, and we're at that overlap point between the 4th and 5th of December, and we're beginning on page 99 or so. And in the segue, DK says, the moment an aspirant begins to work consciously at his own unfoldment and to consider and deal with the aura with which he is equipped, then he passes through three stages on the path of return. Okay, let's see what also another part of the segue, time and vast effort to achieve a different polarization and to become focused upon the mental plane. This takes time and vast effort, says the Tibetan. Eventually, as mentioned above, the radiation of the soul is substituted in place of the hitherto present emotional activity of the aspirant. This emanation is, in reality, a radiation from the love petals of the egoic lotus. Well, that's the point. May I interject? When the higher of the pairs of opposites begins to manifest itself. Before that time, we're pretty well in the hall of ignorance, and the higher of the pairs of opposites is not a consideration for the one passing through the experience of the outer three petals of the egoic lotus. Okay. Now, let's see this again, and right, I didn't want the original sound on because I sometimes get this, you know, condition in my lungs that is not conducive to listening to anything. Okay. So he passes through three stages. The moment he begins to work on his own unfoldment. Okay. And I think we maybe make that a little bigger. Yeah? Okay. What are these three stages? Let's see if we can determine something. Maybe that's where I have to be. I have to be at that point. Right. I was in the smaller of the documents. Okay. What are these three stages during his progress upon the path of return? And this is included, the whole rest of the book is really included here. The stage wherein he discovers the potency and quality of his astral aura. Now, that's sort of comes as a surprise, I guess. Owing to the fact that this is in this second solar system, the quality of love and its distortion, may I suggest, as desire, and its distortion into the astral nature, the development of emotional sensitivity is peculiarly and almost unnaturally strong. It's backing up the idea that this is very much a 2-4-6 solar system, which aligns with the rays of the astral body. It is, and may I suggest naturally, it is, he says, stronger than the mental body and its mental direction. So I will continue in that kind of astral color there. But definitely in this solar system, which is not the first major, it's the second major solar system, we have a situation in which the mental body is not as strong as the astral body. Okay. It is stronger than the mental body and its mental direction. Now, maybe in the next solar system, because it will be a first-ray solar system, which aligns better with the number 3 than the number 2 aligns with the number 3, we will again have a strong mentality, but I think it will be transcended by will. So that's the first of the stages, maybe, may I suggest, that comes as a surprise. Maybe people did not realize how strong their astral aura was. That comes when a disciple, or maybe even a group, begins to undertake work, conscious work, on his own unfoldment. And to consider the aura with which he is equipped, which inevitably comes to people who wish to advance along the path. And then I'll make this a little bit, put it in a different color. He then passes through 3 stages, and we are now looking at those 3 stages. We've just looked at the first one. He discovers the strength of his astral body. Then comes another stage, the stage wherein the mental vehicle increases its potency and produces, finally, a mental radiation which is so strong that it dominates and controls the astral aura. So we'll put that in a good mental color. The mental vehicle increases its potency. Finally, and produces finally a mental radiation, which is so strong that it controls the astral aura. And probably, you know, this is coming from increasing soul contact, which makes of the mind an instrument held steady in the light. Okay. So this domination comes to all of us and is necessary if we want to outgrow and outlive this sort of unconscious astralism. We start to become conscious of it, and as I say, I think it may be surprising to many how very entrenched it is and how very spontaneously reactive it is. And then the third development, the stage wherein the soul expresses its essential nature of love and begins to pour its radiation into the astral aura via the astral body. So finally, true love, or something truer than what we normally find in the astral vehicle, is generated. Eventually, the sensitivity of love is substituted for emotional sensitivity and desire. That is, I think, a very important moment. Well, it's not a moment. It's it's a process. And we overcome that unconscious, instinctual reactivity of the astral body, and the feeling of the heart. Master Moria talks about that. He doesn't just use the word feeling as if in the pejorative sense. He says to develop heart feeling is a very good thing. Well, that is substituted for the solar plexus type of feeling, which is quite blind and compulsive and confining. Okay. So eventually, the sensitivity of love is substituted. So basically, we discover the astral body, the mental body grows stronger than the astral body, and eventually the love of the soul and even of the spiritual triad, as the Antikoran is built, is substituted for the hitherto solar plexus emotional blind kind of reactivity. Interesting that we'll all be going through these stages, or have done so. Let me just check that all is well. You know, one wrong press of a hidden button, or not finding a certain button can mean the need to do hours of work over again. Okay, going on with Master DK, aspirants are to be found at all these three stages of sensitivity. And, you know, I just have to ask, where are you? Where am I regarding these three stages of sensitivity? Just pause for a moment. Are we just discovering, oh my, the astral body? I had no idea. Are we very mentally focused? He sometimes calls it even mentally polarized and overcoming through mind the astral nature. Or are we finally soul conscious, substituting for astrality something much more stable and useful and necessary and sensitive, namely the love of the soul, the love of the triad, and of course, even as time goes on, the love of the monadic area, with which, of course, the ascended Christ is possessed. Okay, so DK says, going on, there comes a moment during the second initiation when the soul of the initiate sweeps into activity and fundamental force, if I might use such a term, submerges the astral nature, vitalizing and inspiring the astral body and changing temporarily the quality of the astral aura and establishing a control which will lead finally to the substitution that I have mentioned above. Well, you know, sometimes these technicalities get very interesting. A moment during the second initiation, we can't say, okay, is that in one life or several, or is it during the actual ceremony? When the soul of the initiate sweeps into activity and fundamental force. Don't you find that interesting? I certainly do. So that's when it happens. And that's when the astral body is vitalized and inspired in a new way. And then again, ask yourself, I'll ask myself, has that happens? Has that happened? Or is there aspiration for that to happen? Or has the second initiation not quite been taken? Or do we recognize the kind of changes that DK is talking about here? And then DK takes up, as he sometimes does, a way of linking Christian theology, or maybe Buddhist theology, because Buddhism does have a theology, with the kinds of esoteric changes which are here noted. So, the sensitivity of love is substituted. That's what we're talking about here. And I'll make that word substituted even a bit bigger, because that's too big, for the emotional sensitivity and desire. So, basically he's saying, this is an aspect of the truth which underlies the doctrine of vicarious atonement. Or what is that all about? Christ died for our sins. And we're looking at the idea of substitution. But DK tells us it is woefully distorted by Christian theology. And I'm sure that when Muslims and maybe Buddhists to look at the Christian theology, they cannot help but notice that it relieves its adherence from a lot of responsibility. Christ will do it for you. All you have to do is give emotional assent to the idea that he is your savior. And oftentimes it's the initiate Jesus that is pictured, and not even really the Christ. So this is an aspect of the truth which underlies the idea of vicarious at-one-ment or atonement. This substitution of true love for emotion, the sensitivity of love for emotion. I think it would be well, you know, I would need to ponder it too, the manner in which this substitution is an aspect of the truth underlying the doctrine of vicarious atonement. there are just these higher energies which do assist, and they do flow into the astral body. And in that sense, they are the beneficent gift of higher beings like the Christ. And hence we are atoned through the action of a greater being. But, you know, the old question of what will save you? Is it faith or is it works? And each one has their adherence, or is it a combination of both? Now, the Buddhists, even the Hindus, Muslims, I think they don't see how you can be saved without works. By sheer belief alone, the way some of those affected by Christian theology seem to think. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me either. But at least an openness to the idea that this beneficence is flowing is useful. even if Christ doesn't do it all for you. I mean, how could we ever become a master or a Chohan or a liberated monad or whatever, if some other unit within the present universe, or any universe, did it all for us? I think hard-working students of esotericism will reject that distortion. I think they will recognize it as a distortion, a twisting. That's what it means, torture, the idea of turning until it hurts, a distortion. Turning in a way that disfigures. That's what a distortion is. Now, as I say, this has been and will be a very long section, and my hope at this late hour, just before Tuya calls me and says, "Where are you?" You know, because before, honestly, I felt too exhausted. After so many programs today, to do this. But then, as they say, something came over me. Maybe foolishness, but I give it a try. So the next section here, which is part of a longer section. It takes us from page 100. Now, he wants to go back a bit and deal with some processes which we all go through. Let us deal with the aforementioned, a fair bit of four, I think. fair bit. Maybe up here. Somewhere up here. I'm not going to torture myself trying to find the exact reference. Or will I say I'm not even as I do? Well, you know, if we study carefully, we will find everything we need. So I'm not going to go too far. I'd like to remember everything. But I don't. And my aura or my area for impression is not yet built up enough or sensitive enough to remember everything here that Master DK has given. Okay. So, basically, he says, going on, looks like page 100, yes. Let us now deal with the aforementioned processes of registration, of recording interpretations, and the resultant invocative response. I think it wouldn't be too hard to find those words if I wanted to take the risk. Recording and I guess I have no choice. Let's see where it comes up. And recording here it is. So there are three of them. Recording and reducing into correct and available concepts, and then we also have this stage of resultant invocation. And I'm not sure what the third one is, but, there it is, in commentary 36, and we're already in commentary 40. So, indeed, it was a four mentioned, quite a bit of four. What we're now going to take up. Okay. So let us now deal with the aforementioned processes of registration. Maybe that's the one I missed. The recording interpretations and the resultant invocative response. So just try to follow, as I will, what the process really is. Something strikes you, and you have to give it some sort of interpretation. It cannot simply remain a vague registration, and when you do that, invocation, evocation, that circle begins. D.K. further says, he goes on and says, we must bear in mind always that I am stating general rules. Why do I feel a sense of relief when I hear him say that? And that I am not dealing either with the ideal or with the undesirable. The sources of impression change as the disciple makes progress, though always the larger and greater source will include all lesser sources. So I am stating general rules and not that which is ideal or that which is undesirable. And then the obvious increase in the value, the spiritual value of that which impresses. The sources of impression change as the disciple makes progress, and the, and this is important, and the greater, the larger and greater sense will include, or source, will include all lesser sources. It's not like there's something exclusionary that happens, something larger and larger and larger descends, and as a result, the hitherto quite useful sources of impression become just an aspect, or D.K. would say, a partial truth. Now, one of our great problems in dogmatism and in misinterpretation that illusion brings is we think that every useful revelation is in fact the final revelation. I think Christianity suffers from this. Muslim faith suffers from this. Islam. I think does Buddhism suffer in this way? Is the Buddha the final word? Well, those who really know the Buddha's methods and what he indicated would have to say no. But so many people gripped by terror that there may be more, hang on for dear life to the partial revelation as if it were the whole revelation. So get ready as I will try to do, for ongoing revelation until we return to the very capstone of this universe or any other universe which we have experienced, albeit in a different form, and we've experienced them all, and there is an infinite series of them. But as if that particular revelation was all that can be revealed, that too is an error. Because in the supra-universal realm is something from which every finite universe in an infinite series has been derived. There is the absolute infinitude. Well, it's just really too big for us. Way, way too big for us, but we can start simply with giving grateful credit to the possibility of increasing revelation instead of recoiling with fear at that possible revelation. I know a quite a fundamentalist Christian who was offered the opportunity to think in broader terms, and he said simply, I don't dare. I don't dare do that. Well, why? I mean, he would be giving up the possibility, maybe, of his heaven or his haven. And he was terrified at that prospect and probably will spend the rest of this incarnation, even though surrounded by some who could lead him on further, he will probably spend the rest of this incarnation in that state of recoil. Okay, so registration, recording interpretations, and resultant invocative response. DK keeps on saying the same thing, but in different ways. And that's, we have to get used to that particular method, and then sometimes you have to go hunting pages back to find out how he first introduced the subject. But certainly, may I suggest we wish to become ever more sensitive and to register ever more. That is, if we are a true student of esotericism and a true server using the esoteric methods. We want the registration rather than be among those who contemplate the whole idea of increasing registration with trepidation. Maybe we were there once. You know, maybe most probably we were there and have outgrown that. Okay. Now going on with the Tibetan, The fact that a man is sensitive to hierarchical impression in his mental aura will not prevent his being sensitive in his astral nature to the invocative and emotional call of human beings. Well, just really important statements. This, of course, deserves some kind of Ray 2 treatment there. Look at the In Discipleship of the New Age, Volume 1, right around page 40 or so. Look at the psychologists, for instance, the chakras which they use, the head, the throat, the heart, the solar plexus. Now, if you're going to use the solar plexus and the heart, you will become sensitive to a hierarchical impression. In the mental aura, the mind will be held steady in the light, but you will also be able to use that solar plexus to respond sensitively in your reconditioning astral nature to the emotional, invocative, and emotional call of human beings. Now, wouldn't you want that? I know I would want that. It's so easy to forget the basic needs of our fellow human beings. But what is it we need not forget that which it is necessary to respond to? So if I kind of move that around and go to Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 1, and maybe I go to page 40-ish, well, pretty much 41, I guess. It's, there it is, it's the head, the heart, the solar plexus, and throat centers. Four centers are involved. And obviously, if the solar plexus has been reconditioned, we can respond sensitively to the ordinary needs of the ordinary individual. And if you look at group two, we have the same possibility. Head, heart, and solar plexus centers. Each collection, I guess you should see this, shouldn't you? Each collection of chakras gives the hint as to how response can come from us to them. Imagine being a secretary in the arcane school. Imagine being a mentor in the School for Esoteric Studies, or a mentor in the a Moria Federation. We have to look at our students as if, yes, they are passing through the ordinary difficulties of life, and we cannot aim everything so high that we are quite useless in helping with some of these practicalities. Think about Master DK. He certainly did help with practicalities. He said, you know, to one person, you don't exercise enough. To another person, he says, you eat too much, or you treat the body too well. Sometimes eating excessively and sometimes starving it. You know, the classic bulimia kind of psychological disease. He got into all that. You don't rest enough. Well, he got into that with Alice Bailey. And I think with RSW also. So he paid attention to some of the very ordinary needs. Now, by what means he did this, okay, he certainly had means other than are available to us, but he did it. And that sets an example for us that we cannot be always too high in our considerations to be understood by our students, or to be of very little help in the pressing personal problems through which they are passing. We've had some people working with us that have been excellent in just finding out the circumstances, the personal circumstances of various students in the student body. And that discovery has been useful in giving them aid and helping retain them when they were wavering and, you know, thinking, well, I just can't handle this. Okay. So that little sermon is over. Okay. So this is so important from the Tibetan, then, the fact that a man is sensitive to hierarchical impression in his mental area will not prevent his being sensitive in his astral nature. In other words, we don't throw regenerated astrality out the window just because it has the name astral associated with it. The two together are most useful, in effect, if the disciple sees to it that they are related. Forget this not, brother of mine. And, you know, that's still kind of a continuation of our indigo work here. Two together are most useful, in effect. And then it's our task to relate the two and the six, and relate the heart and the solar plexus. And if this occurs around the time of the second initiation, okay, then it tells us that maybe we can be truly qualified members of the new group of world servers. I may suggest that DK says, forget this not, brother of mine, because precisely it is the kind of thing that people tend to forget, thinking only of the hierarchical impression. You can tell people academically many wonderful things, and maybe you can demonstrate your love nature and so forth, but they're having problems in their area of ordinary living. And maybe you have to be there, just as the Tibetan was, to help them get through it. Okay, so this first one is all about registration from or within two different areas. Now here's another one. Recording interpretations, or the capacity to interpret recorded impressions, and that is, maybe the wording is just slightly different than above, is likewise learnt, says the Tibetan, as the mental aura develops under the influence of the mind held steady in the light of the soul. Okay, likewise learnt as the mind is held steady in the light of the soul. The disciple learns that all recorded truth is susceptible of many interpretations, and that these unfold with increasing clarity. As one takes one initiation after another, and as he develops conscious responsiveness. Okay. Now, I'll kind of put that in a yellow in the mental area. Interpret recorded impressions. So there are impressions, and then we have to become the interpreter of those impressions, and that requires sometimes a very fine use of words. Recording interpretations. The Tibetan's use of words with Alice Bailey really amazes me. It is so somehow appropriate, and invokes us and evokes our interested response. So, interpret the, that's number two, the capacity to interpret recorded impressions. It's also learned, yes, as the mental aura is developing. And how does that mental aura develop? By being held, may I suggest, by the mind, by being held steady in the light of the soul. And then we get that kind of relativity of interpretation, how we can word these things, how we can interpret them, just as DK has. It's an important statement. All recorded truth is susceptible of many interpretations. Now just think about that for a minute. All recorded truth is susceptible to many interpretations. Depends, I suppose, on your angle of vision, and that these interpretations unfold. These, I suppose, the many interpretations, the Tibetan says, unfold with increasing clarity as one initiation after another is taken, and as he develops conscious responsiveness. It's a progress of evolution in consciousness about which we have to be patient and to realize that it is presently in process. If we are truly a sincere disciple in the DK mode of teaching. Okay. Now, maybe going on to another one. The ability to invoke demonstrates from life to life and involves the invocation of conscious response from the anima mundi, or from the subconscious soul of all things, as well as from the human consciousness and from the world of super conscious contacts. I think we're going to be taken back into some of the diagrams which Roberto Saccioli provided us in his psychosynthesis manual. So what does it involve? We invoke from all levels, not just one level alone. Conscious response from the subconscious soul of all things, the anima mundi, as well as the human consciousness and the super world of superhuman or superconscious contact. We observe that we learn to do this as one initiation after another passes. But let's say when We're told in the rules of the road, there is no rush, no hurry, and yet there is no time to lose. Rush and hurry can be inimical to these abilities to invoke from the anima mundi, from humanity, and from the superconscious contact, and I suppose some kind of interaction occurs as a result of this invocation. We are, you know, remember, we have this overarching supreme science of contact, and right now we've been given three types of contact, which each one of which I think produces an illuminative interaction. Not an easy book. Not an easy book, but of course, easier if we can go back and study what we perforce have had to go through, perhaps too rapidly. See this question of interpretation. You know, it's according to the law of mutation. Where do we stand in time and space and with respect to imminent, not immanent, but imminent, plan, the imminence of the plan. Yes, it is built in, it's immanent also, but where do we really stand as we interpret it? What time is it in the development of ourselves, our groups, our nations, and humanity as a whole? This will help to determine the many interpretations, because they will be relative to the point at which the process is taking place and the stand is being made. I mean, right now, we have a situation in which autocracy and selfishness and political power-seeking is a danger to ourselves, our groups, our nations, and to humanity as a whole. Does that make a difference about the interpretation of a recorded truth? Would it mean something different at a less fraught moment in human development? Well, might well indeed. But you know, we will be high initiates and masters someday, and so much that is elusive right now in the presentation of this book will not be elusive then. I say elusive, not illusive, because illusive means it's filled with illusion, but elusive means that it's slippery. So we've been talking here about the ability to invoke, demonstrating from life to life and always improving. I guess if we are quite impressed or can demonstrate the attitude of gratitude, you know, it's a little trite, but there it is. The attitude of gratitude, we will simply go along with the process and not be constantly pulling ourselves up by the roots, as the old saying goes, to see whether we are growing or not. Obviously, that's not too healthy for the roots when you do that. Okay. So we started on page 99, and we are now on page 101. Goodness, maybe a little more. So this ability to invoke, whether it's the subconscious soul of inanimate, well, not inanimate, but subconscious soul of all lesser things, or invoking human consciousness or super consciousness, okay? This ability develops steadily as the disciple treads the path of discipleship. You know, hearteningly, it might be stated, we get better and better at this kind of invocation. We would expect to improve, would we not? And as I say, even what we know of Master DK, he was a brilliant second in command to Pythagoras 2,500 years ago, roughly. So, yes, it takes a while to build a great scholar and one whose magnetic aura is filled with a mine of appropriate responses. Anyway, the ability thus to invoke develops steadily as the aspirant treads this the path of discipleship. Now, Alice Bailey was humble in her assessment. The Arcane School was meant to produce disciples. It was not meant to produce initiates. At least that was not its primary goal. Maybe initiates of probation, yes, but not necessarily offering people the third initiation. Come join us. Okay. So, the ability to invoke in this way on three levels develops steadily as the aspirant treads the path of discipleship. It is frequently prefaced in the earlier stages by much confusion, much astral psychism, and frequent wrong interpretations. There is no need at this stage, however, for undue distress, because all that is needed is experience, and that experience is gained through experiment and its expression in daily life. What is that? The justification? Through experience of theory, a kind of Leonian factor. Okay, so let's get this under wraps. Much confusion, much psychism, and wrong interpretations. And I think DK is implying here that it does bring distress to those who are experiencing this, these reactions. But no need at this stage, and he does qualify it, for undue distress. I guess there's going to be enough distress to produce incentive to correct the situation, because, says DK, all that is needed is experience, and that experience is gained through experiment and its expression in daily life. Well, he's speaking as one who knows. He's been through it, and probably even now, we do not stand where he stood 2,500 years ago, would be my guess. He was called, I think, Aryasangha, the noble community of the Buddha, the Arhat, the noble one, and he might have been a Neoplatonic Plotinus. However, we want to pronounce that Plotinus or Plotinus. Who was running schools? That's certainly possible. So, okay, well, anyway, resuming, trying to, you know, meet many demands. Anyway, no need for undue distress. Some distress there will be, because anyway, he says, all that is needed is experience, and that experience is gained through experiment, which is in a way the attempt to justify that which has occurred to one, the knowledge that has come, And then, if justified, I suppose, the expression of the justified knowledge in Leo, as expression in daily life. Okay, a little more, very little more. In no case is the truism of learning through a system of trial and error proved more correct than it is in the life and experience of the accepting disciple. The accepting disciple is assuming that what he's being told is true. And so he makes the takes the risk and accepts, and then he can justify, if he can, and probably he can, the experience. So that knowledge. So that by the time he becomes an accepted disciple, more of this justified knowledge will be proven in his consciousness. You know, when we look back, it's going to seem like quite an ordeal, I think. And we're passing through it now, but it's better to understand it and be patient with it and go with the process that has for ages been laid out for the advancing disciple. Oh, now there's more. Okay, I didn't even see that. When he is an accepted disciple, the errors decrease in number, even though the trials or the experimental use of the many and varying energies, which, may I add, he's attempting to justify and prove as correct, become more extensive and therefore cover a much wider range of activity. Okay, well, DK said in a different way what I was also trying to say. The errors decrease for the one who is truly the accepted disciple. So we go from being accepting to, well, there's a stage in between here where we, and of course, I'm forgetting it, I'm so sorry. But this leads eventually to the accepted disciple, where we have a true supervision by the master. Maybe the chela in the light is an interim stage on the way to a chela that is actually supervised more by the master than by the reports which a higher internal disciple gives to the master. So anyway, for the accepted disciple, trials increase and experiments increase and errors decrease in number, though the trials increase. And that's where DK begins, when he says the processes of registration are founded upon what I might call invocative approaches from a wide range of possible contacts. And, you know, it might be good to go on here, but I have done more, perhaps, than I ought at this time. I've gone to page 101, and, oh yeah, there's a lot coming, and the hour is late. The hour is late. But we're going to be given some of the essentialities which help to condense our understanding and simplify our understanding. Yeah, many technical things are coming. And because Master DK varies slightly his terminology from one mention to another of something which is virtually the same thing, we might get a little confused, and I certainly do. But let's just say this is our introduction. So I'm going to we've begun 40, and it has been from 04-05 of December, and we've gone, as usual, just a couple of pages to 101, and we will take it down to the next place where we did stop. Excuse me. And let's just say that we ended with, at this point, 40. And at 04-05 of December, and we started on page 99, and we took it into page 101. So 99 to 101, and our next program will be program 41, and I better not say when it will be. It's not going to be tonight. And we'll start with page 101 and see if we can pick up the pieces, as it were. The difficulty in stopping in the middle of something, of course, the subject has not been completed, but we are definitely on page 101. And sometimes DK will say something which is so encapsulating, so condensing, that it manages to simplify for us what has been kind of a, as we thought of it, a confused and a confused arrangement, filled with the same different names for the same thing, and maybe the same name for different things, or slight variations that made us question, is he talking about the same thing? But we will see. So I'm just going to sometimes he stays with this subject. Registration is the very first of the three, and he seems to be sticking with that, or at least reverting to it. So, wish me luck that when I start undertaking this once again, that I actually will know where I am and what I'm talking about. And depending upon the intensity of the degree of study that you want to give it, well, that will determine your degree of assimilation. So I'm going to call this, and I'm hoping that as I save it, it actually will save. It's a new one, and let's call it been doing a bit of wheezing here, I'm afraid. But if I keep my voice low enough, then maybe I will not have that particular problem. So, it may not let me do this. We'll see. So this is going to be program number 40. In a smaller form. Okay, let's see if I can do that. Well, first of all, I won't make you suffer through it. Okay, friends, I said I thought my mind was gone. It really is gone at this point. It's about 20 minutes to 3 here, a.m. So, in case I didn't do it, I want to wish you happy assimilation on the part of Tuya and me, and then also our communications team, always very busy in various ways, BL and Joe and Harold and Michael, Stacy, and Frederick has been assisting. And then, of course, the faculty that will also receive this. So I'm just letting it go for the night, and I'm hoping that competent as you all are, I'm speaking to the communications team, that everything will be worked out. Okay, friends, that's going to be it for this evening. I'll stop the recording, and I will end the program. Bye for now.